Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Mobility Radio, featuring industry leaders and innovators in mobile technology.
Good morning. This is Brett Cooper from Atlanta Mobility Radio. Got a great show on today. Have a couple of good guests to wrap up the end of the year. From Catavolt, we have George Machini, and then from Atlanta Community Food Bank, Richard LeBurr, and Jeff Steinke from Blue Fletch is on this morning also. And we'll be talking a little bit about a app that ACFB has done with Catavolt and Blue Fletch here in a couple minutes. But I want to introduce George first. So Catavolt, can you tell us a little bit about Catavolt, what you guys are working on?
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us on the program. Catavolt is a mobile platform that's cloud-based, but specializes in connecting to existing enterprise systems that run the core business processes for our clients and helps them to move from a pre-mobile business process to a mobile-enabled business process. In a lot of cases, that helps them add efficiencies or really modernize. And so we do that in a very secure way and in a very agile way. So as we approach the end of the year, we thought that a great way to demonstrate that and to give back to the community is to work with the Atlanta Community Food Bank to see if we can get better efficiencies and to move more meals out. And so that was an idea that was kind of born through collaborating with them, and we're really proud of how that turned out.
Awesome. And the types of apps, so you mentioned, taking business apps and mobilizing them. We'll hop in to talk to Richard about what they're working on here in a second. But for you guys, is there any specific industries or areas where you find the most value in taking something that's out there and then tying a mobile app on top of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So our clients tend to be in manufacturing, healthcare, retail, and logistics. And what we found is in those industries, there's transformative events, things that are forcing those businesses to really rethink some business process. So for example, in the retail industry, the use of brick and mortar stores to kind of either integrate with e-commerce or to overcome e-commerce challenges has been a major mover. In healthcare, the Affordable Care Act has really forced a lot of organizations to rethink how they approach the market and how they service their clients. That's a perfect time to think about how to interject a modern business process, something that involves mobile devices, being able to react to events and data in real time instead of having any latency. So those are the driving events that force change, and that's where Catavolt helps our clients.
Can you dig into healthcare a little bit? So within that space, I know that there's a lot of compliancy and security requirements. What makes you guys a good fit for the healthcare industry?
In the healthcare industry, the regulation and the changes thereof are very quick now, where before it was a much more drawn-out process. So a lot of our clients don't really know what the operating environment's going to be like in the next 12 months because they're just sifting through all of the changes. When that happens, traditional software development tends to fail because if you're reacting in 6-month, 12-month cycles in an environment where things could be wildly different at that point, it makes it very challenging. So a platform like Catavolt, what it allows you to do is to innovate now and do it very quickly in a very agile manner. And that helps you get results today, but be flexible enough to change along with your business in the future. So a lot of our clients that mobilized early have enjoyed competitive advantages. But then those advantages actually multiplied as more and more regulations or more and more business process changes were needed, and they were able to react to those very quickly. And we're seeing that the ability to adapt to your market as it changes is truly a competitive advantage that will set you apart from others. And in some industries like healthcare, consumer choice or consumer behavior has really changed quite a bit. So in healthcare, people get to choose a lot more now than they used to, and that's forcing a whole new set of behavior, and adapting to that has been a challenge for a lot of clients.
Cool. So picked up on one thing there. It's the speed of getting something out the door. Do you guys typically go in and mobilize a whole system, or is it just that you find something that's really high business value and mobilize that at first? What's the optimal way to approach that?
Yeah, I think what you have to find is a business process that offers you opportunity, where if you were to change it, you either achieve a higher competitive rate or you're more efficient, you influence your bottom line. And so what we find is if we focus on the business process, it usually involves multiple systems. The way the IT assets have been built over time have been very functionally oriented. You have a billing system, you have a logistics system, you have a fulfillment system. And then when you think about arming somebody with the ability to do their job right then and there and make better decisions through better data, it actually has to break down the silos that have been built in previous generations. So we often tackle it from the problem first, and then find the systems of record that have the information you need to make better decisions. And that's in every industry. What we found is there's an overflow of information. There's almost too much information. And being able to identify the pieces of information that actually make a difference that somebody needs to see at that moment in time, delivering it in that moment in time, is the big difference in changing a process.
Got it. So with those processes, are there any really popular apps that you guys see where it's easy to walk in someplace and see, like, here's a sales app or here's a logistics app? Like, what's the low-hanging fruit for most people from the get-go?
Oh, that great question. So in this building today is one of our great clients, Vulcan Materials. And they're in a business where 40% of costs or somewhere north of that is actually getting the materials from one place to another. They move big, heavy rocks and asphalt and cement and those types of construction materials. And what we found is if you let a sales associate visualize their market, so if I'm making a bid out there and I can see in relation to where I'm at and where my competitor is at, where that bid's being placed, I could start to understand how my competitors are going to bid on it, what cost or load advantage I have here. So we created a pretty straightforward application that mapped out a territory and let you do smarter bidding. Now, by smarter bidding, there wasn't a computer in the background that told you what price to bid at or whether or not you're going to have a certain percentage of winning this deal. It just showed you the reality of what your environment is. And what we found is that increased the win rate and the margin for the clients that used it. They sold more, and they sold more at higher prices by enabling their reps, which in that industry have been within the industry for 20, 25 years, to just see it better. And those are the little things that add up to really big success points.
So it's data they already had, and they just mobilized it and gave somebody the real-time decision-making ability, right?
That's absolutely correct.
Nice. And the Any other sort of big wins that, like, low hanging fruit? So you, the sales guys and the bidding folks. Anything else you guys see from an app perspective that's low hanging for folks to try to pick off, or a lot of your customers have used from the get go?
Absolutely. So think about a manufacturing environment where you have many people making many decisions a day, and their decisions add up in the aggregate to really what you produce. Right. We've been able to go in on the shop floor, a place that is has plenty of IT systems, plenty of technology, but not a lot of enabling technology, meaning that a place that where you usually collect data and know what's going on. So when you turn on a line and you start producing your product, when the line goes down, you're collecting all this data, but you're not delivering it. You're really running reports over historical reports over it. So we enabled those folks that are out on the line to see what's going on. Where are their backups? Where is there quality issues? Based on contracts, what should they be producing now? A lot of times they have a choice of 3-4 things they can work on, and sometimes they have their favorite thing to work on, so they kind of choose that. By doing that, we got the actual crew members out on the shop floor to intrinsically make better decisions. And that better meaning it's what the company wants as an outcome. And we didn't do it by overloading them with data. We do it with subtle cues. Hey, is the job that you just picked up, is that the highest priority job that's out there? If not, why don't we point them towards it? And so by doing that, we were able to increase their throughput, which in manufacturing is one of the ways to really be more competitive in the market, is to produce a lot more with the same folks that you have. And so the sales example shows you how mobility can really impact your top line. And then the throughput example in manufacturing shows how you could streamline operations and actually improve your margin.
Awesome. And then the technology involved, what does that look like? What are the pieces involved? So if I want to use Catavault as a company, what do I have to install or connect?
Yeah, great question. So again, in previous generations of IT, people installed big, heavy on-premise systems. And one of the founding principles of Catapult is that the way those systems were going to change over time was going to be very slow. They're just, companies are so invested in implementing them and they have expertise around them. But the way that people wanted to interact with those systems was going to change rapidly. And it was going to create this gap in the market. And so Catavolt's cloud platform is truly a cloud platform. And as you could see from the community food bank here, you turn it on and it's ready to go, just like any other cloud platform. But it specializes in the secure connectivity to existing enterprise systems without changing the way they run. We said, we're going to build cloud software that adapts to the way that you deployed your system. We're not going to ask you to adapt to the way that we built our cloud system. And so often cases within a day, the platform's up and running, we're connected to a system, and you could start building applications. We took a different approach to how you build applications as well. We wanted to be a more personal experience. What we wanted to do was let the platform eliminate as much of the technology insights as possible for the things that you do over and over, which is security, scalability, the access of data, and let you focus on the user experience. So we built a codeless platform where you can sit down with an end user, a business sponsor, and find out what their problem is. You could come back a few days later with a real working prototype and say, hey, this is how I heard what you said, and I put it into an app. And they could then iterate over that over and over and over again until it becomes an app that's acceptable to them. And this agile approach, what we found is you could do 6 months worth of iterations in a traditional software sense. You could do that in literally 2 weeks here because you're not going away to develop something. You're not taking specs. It just breaks down the traditional barriers. And so the ability to connect to those systems that our clients have without modifying them gets them a big head start. And then the ability to produce solutions in days, minutes, hours, weeks, whatever it is, a lot faster than traditional software gives them the ability to get to a final solution that actually fits into their business. And it's really a new way to develop software.
Awesome. So if somebody wants to get going with Catavolt, what's the process? They reach out to you guys and then they get a sample of Sandbox set up and they can start playing with it that day, like you said, or what's that engagement look like for somebody when they want to start?
Yeah, absolutely. So Catavolt is a combination of two things. It's enabling technology and also over the years of running the business, expertise of how to apply that technology to real world problems. So a lot of times when we engage with our clients, we do a lot of listening up front. And what we do is advise our clients of where we feel like they could get a big impact into their business. One of the biggest challenges that customers have is that if you look at any business process, it could be made better by mobility. So there's almost too much to think about. It's overwhelming. So we have a discovery process where we help them identify the business processes that are good candidates that could give them good payback. And then spinning up the cloud platform, doing a proof of concept, doing a pilot, doing a deployment is really something that's very agile. So a lot of our clients within 60 days will go from an idea to a fully deployed solution that's returning on their investment within that 60 days.
Awesome. And if somebody wants to get started, where do they find more information?
www.catavolt.com, C-A-T-A-V-O-L-T. And you could request a demonstration and you could meet with one of our application consultants to kind of just talk through your requirements.
All right. And Catavolt's C-A-T-A-V-O-L-T, right?
Correct.
What's the origin of the name in there?
It's very interesting. It's something that I remember sitting on the couch at home trying to find a .com domain name, which have you guys ever searched for .com domain names? Somebody's just out there buying all of them.
Yeah, there aren't.
And this thing popped into my head. I don't know what I was thinking, if I was watching a TV show
or something. Wi-Fi Cat was taken?
Yeah, exactly. Wi-Fi Cat, that was one of the ones that... Did you take that?
I think that was Sanjay.
Okay. So it just popped into my head, and it was a word that was easy to say. I have... three young sons, and if they could say it, then I think we're in good shape there. And we bought the domain name, and it caught on.
Naming advice: just take a bunch of 5 and 6 year olds and try to get them to name a company. That's brilliant.
It's either that or all these like prescription drug names. I don't know where they come up with it either.
So I can start it here. I can start it.
If it's any consolation, all the .orgs are gone too.
Is that right?
Nice. So Richard LeBert from Atlanta Community Food Bank. So I actually know you from the Startup Drinks is where I first met you. And I think you told me about ACFB. It must have been like 2011 or 12. And I think you were formerly a board member there. And then you started full time. Was it 2011 or?
Let's see. It's 2.5 years ago. So 2012, April 2012.
And can you talk about the mission of Atlanta Community Food Bank, which you guys work on, what you're doing?
Yeah. So the Atlanta Community Food Bank has been around since 1979, and I've been involved. I met the founder, Bill Bowling, who's still at the food bank, by the way, probably about 1999. So I've known him for 15 years. The Atlanta Community Food Bank, its mission is to educate, empower, and engage the community in the fight against hunger. And what we do on a day-to-day basis is we, among other things, are the probably largest provider of food to over 600 agencies that feed the hungry and those who are struggling with issues around hunger. So we cover 29 counties across North Georgia, including all of Metro Atlanta. There's about 6.5 million people in our service territory. We estimate that roughly 1 million of them will experience hunger at some point during the year. So it's our job to provide the food that all the different agencies, whether it's a soup kitchen or a pantry in your church or the Atlanta Union Mission or whatever it might be, they need food to feed those folks, and we're one of the primary sources for that.
Can you talk about that process? So you know, 600 organizations you guys are delivering food to or getting food to, and where does all the food come from? Where is it stored? How does that work?
Food comes from a lot of different places. You know, obviously we do food drives and that sort of thing. About 70% of our food or so comes from private donations. A lot of those private donations are from very generous donations by major retailers and wholesalers of food. That includes we pick up at every major retail grocery store in the 29-county territory. So this is stuff that's about to go off date or the can has been dented and no one's going to buy it or the apples are bruised or whatever it might be. That's a lot of our food. Then there's individual donations and food drives, also part of our private donations. And about a third of our food is either funded under government programs or provided to us directly by the government, you know, truckload quantities of stuff.
Yep.
So we get that food in, and we have a staff that's all they do is look for food sources day in and day out. And then we have about 150,000 square foot facility near the Georgia Tech campus, where we run a warehouse and we run a fleet of trucks, et cetera. And that's so the food comes in, we sort it, classify it, put it in the warehouse, and then we either deliver it or agencies come to our place and pick it up. So 6 days a week, we have agencies coming to the food bank location and picking up an order of food.
What's that that intake and sorting? So I know I think my team has volunteered last month to actually help with several tons of sorting, and you guys have a lot of volunteers to help that. What does that process look like as you get in food from all these very generous organizations and restaurants? Like, how do you sort that, and then how do you take it and put it on pallets and send out to these 600 organizations you guys are partnered with?
Sure. So we use a lot of volunteers for that, and we're very grateful to everybody who comes and volunteers at our place. I think we use something like 100,000 volunteer hours a year, folks, and a lot of it is sorting food. What we do with the food when it arrives really depends on what the food is. You know, a lot of stuff comes in from wholesalers, and it might be a whole truckload of chickens, in which case, you know, we know what it is and we put it away in the freezer, and that's pretty simple. But then again, we have truckloads of stuff that might come in from a warehouse somewhere where they don't tell us anything about what it is at all. It just shows up. We're kind of unique. And when we talk to people in the food wholesaling industry about our processes and systems, they go, wait a minute, you have trucks show up at your warehouse and you don't know what's going to be in the truck until you open the doors?
Yeah.
And the answer is, yeah, we have that happen pretty regularly because, you know, somebody will be kind of going through their warehouse and they'll be cleaning out the stuff that's getting close to off date, and they'll just throw it all in a truck and send it to us and say, you know, we have a truckload coming your way. And we say, awesome. So, you know, we use staff and volunteers to kind of go through and classify that stuff and put it away in the warehouse. And then anything that comes in from a grocery store or comes in from a individual donations or a food drive of some kind, you know, we not only have to we have to inspect that, right? I mean, you'd be amazed what people give us in food drives, and so you have to kind of go through it and make sure, first of all, that it's safe for folks to have. And then you have to classify it into categories because no agency wants to just order a grab bag of they're not sure what it is.
Yeah.
You know, so it goes, we got kind of a process where we use a lot of volunteers to sort through that food. First of all, determine if it's safe to pass on to anybody. And if it is, then classify it into categories, health and beauty aids, you know, staples, you know, canned goods, vegetables, fruit. We separate into, you know, about a dozen different categories of products so that when the agencies order it, they know what it is.
Sounds pretty complex. And can you talk a little bit about the, you know, with this, these hundreds of thousands of hours of people sorting and looking at things and inspecting, how does that get tracked? What does the technology behind this look like?
Well, the technology behind the whole warehousing is we run a big warehouse management system called McCola. That's a pretty standard, you know, out there in the food warehousing industry. It's certainly to, you know, what George was talking about. I was sort of smiling to myself as he was describing companies and their old internal systems. You know, McCola works perfectly fine and it gets the job done for us, but it is certainly not brand spanking new technology. And there's plenty of stuff that they built 30 years ago when they built the core of that system that if we had do-overs, we'd build differently. But it's not really worth the pain and effort to rip that all out and replace it with something. So that's the core system that tracks everything that's in our inventory. And then we have layered on top of that a variety of other technologies. We have barcode-based picking and system. So we use a system that layers on top of that that our order pickers use to know where everything is in the warehouse and be paperless when they're going around the warehouse picking orders for agencies. And we have an system that's an online web-based system that our 600 agencies use for ordering so that, you know, they have an ID and they can go online, see everything that's in our inventory, place an order, set a time to come, either have us deliver it to them or come pick it up. And that's, you know, that's basically homegrown, that technology. That's a very simple website where, you know, they can see what's online. And that's the work that Blue Fletch and Catavolt helped us mobilize.
Awesome. And the that process itself, that so there's these millions of, I guess, thousands of SKUs you guys have or categories. If I'm a you know, soup kitchen or a church that helps you know, get food in people's mouths and the hungry's mouths, what's the you know, how do they go and actually access that? So you said there's a website and they say, you know, I want to make peanut butter sandwiches for, you know, 600 people this week. Do they just like put an order in for bread and some other stuff, and then like you said, you guys just ship it and it shows up on their dock? Is that how it works?
That's certainly you know, one way that it works. Yeah, so the basic ordering process is that, you know, once you're qualified as an agency with us, then we give you an online ID, and, you know, you can go on our website, log in, and you get instant visibility to everything that's in our inventory. And you can go through that list, and essentially, you know, while we don't charge for food, in effect, we have kind of order limits to prevent, you know, we only have so much inventory. We don't want you to decide to take all of it and leave nothing for anybody else. But within your order limit, you can order anything you want off of, you know, what's available in the inventory. And we're just, you know, as people are ordering that, we're ticking off what's available so that, you know, when we're out of peanut butter, we're out of peanut butter. But, you know, if you want to order a caseload of peanut butter and you want to order a caseload of jelly and whatever else, you can do that, or vegetables or fresh produce, which incidentally is about our single largest category these days. It's probably a third of all of our product these days is fresh produce for folks. So, yeah, that's the process. They go on, they do that, and at the same time, they set an appointment. And that might be an appointment to come pick up at our place. You'd be amazed to see with the variety of vehicles we get from all these agencies. It's, you know, everything from a panel truck to somebody's Volkswagen Beetle shows up at our dock, and, you know, we load their order in there. Or increasingly, given that it's 29 counties and given the sprawl in Metro Atlanta, you might imagine a lot of these agencies, it could be an hour and a half drive for them to get down to Joseph Lowery Boulevard. So increasingly, we're delivering stuff to folks. Yep. We're delivering probably about twice as much, in fact, this year as 2 years ago. So the, you know, it might be an appointment for a delivery where we'd put it on our vehicle and show up at their place on, you know, Monday morning at 8 a.m. with their order for the week.
That's awesome. So mobilizing this this process. So can you talk a little bit about the background of you know, how you got together with the guys at Blue Fletch and Catavolt and came to the idea of let's pick out this process and improve it? What did that look like?
Well, I'm trying to remember. I think it was April or May or thereabouts. We actually teamed up with Code for Atlanta and the National Civic Day of Hacking, and we did a hackathon at the food bank. And there was a whole bunch of projects that came out of that. But I think that was the introduction, really, to Blue Fletch and Catavolt at that point, because a bunch of the Blue Fletch guys came to the hackathon and worked on a project, which is actually a completely separate thing that we're still also working on. But out of that, we got in a conversation with them and started talking about, you know, what else they might be able to do to help us. And so, as George was describing, we followed that up with a series of discussions where we talked about a whole variety of different things where we might use the Catavolt technology to make some of our applications more accessible and more mobile. And out of that one, the project that we wound up working on, which is really agency-oriented, kind of bubbled to the top as being kind of relatively easy and high impact for us. And so, you know, we started working on that with the Blue Fletch guys, and it's been amazing how quickly that's gone from kind of idea to implementation. So we're very excited about it.
Awesome. Jeff Sankey's here from Blue Fletch, and I know you were involved in that from the get-go. Can you talk a little bit about how is it different than a regular business app, or was it pretty similar to a lot of the process you guys have done in the last 8 years from your aspect?
Yes and no. It's similar and different. At the end of the day, it's similar in that you're going through a lot of the processes you are with any software development project, with regard to starting out identifying the business problem, defining requirements, putting together designs, and building it out, testing it, and deploying it, and all that fun stuff. The difference really comes from the speed. I mean, I think George mentioned this earlier, and that Catavolt really lends itself to an agile development process. And I'd almost try to one up them there and say it's really agile on steroids. If you think about a traditional agile project, you have your sprints, pretty standard 2-week sprints. You'll have your sprint planning meeting throughout the process. Each day you'll have your stand-up where you get together with a team for 15 minutes and talk about what you're doing. With Catavolt, I mean, you can almost have daily sprints. That's not out of the question, where each morning we're going to come up, we're going to figure out what's in our product backlog or our feature backlog. Let's pick out what we're going to build today. And you're going to deploy a shippable product every single day. So you're doing a lot of the same things you are with any software project or mobile project. The difference is the speed at which you're doing it. And as George mentioned, we were really excited to be able to show them, what you could do with a product like Catavolt, where within 60 days you have a complete product that is complementary to your existing web platform.
What was that process like from the get-go? So there's a bunch of data. So Richard mentioned there's a system that has, this record of all the food they intake and the orders for folks that go out. What did it look like to get tied into that data? Was it multiple systems that you guys had to hook up to, and how long did that take?
So that actually, we're talking about speed. That's one of the things that, isn't as quick, or should say is more traditional, to a project. And, the first part is to do the problem identification. And so if I were to talk to someone who hasn't worked with Catavolt before and they're looking at starting their first project, one of the things I would recommend to them is identify a business solution or a problem very quickly. It's tempting and it's even fun to kind of think about all the different things and all the different projects you can do, but all that's doing is slowing you down. What I would recommend is, pick a quick win, and then once you have that, now start working backwards. So whatever business solution we're trying to come up with, identify where the data is coming from, and let's get our hooks into that data. So then we can start building that product. So, again, just leverage the speed that you have available to you. So as you begin that process, identify the problem, figure out the source of the data that's going to help you solve that problem, and then start building as quick as you can.
Awesome. And Richard, can you talk about that, the actual problem of the ordering and folks being able to do this? What was the origin of that, or the thing you guys, the spark that said this would help make this a lot easier for people? What did you guys come up with there? How did you come up with that?
Well, let me just visualize for you for a second, what an agency looks like. Because I mentioned there are 600 of them. And as you might imagine, we have some agencies that are the 800-pound gorillas and are really big and very sophisticated. But a lot of our 600 agencies are very small. I mean, they might be your local church, and they might be no paid staff whatsoever working in the food ministry and very limited access to technology and very little technological savvy. So the issue that really caught our attention was the idea of, what could we do to just make it a lot easier and faster and simpler for agencies to order from us? And the idea that we rallied around was this idea of, could we make the access to our ordering system, which is web-based, could we really make that a mobile application, in effect, for our agencies, so that they could use their smartphone or a tablet or whatever they have and be able to see what's in our inventory and place an order and set an appointment. For a lot of our agencies, as I said, being really short-staffed and, frankly, on the go, I mean, when they're not ordering from us, they're probably running around in their personal vehicle picking up food from anybody in their neighborhood who wants to give them food. They're very busy, and they don't have time necessarily to sit down at a computer and get on a website with us and place an order, and that takes a big chunk out of their day, slows them down, et cetera. So the idea was, you know, can we use this technology to really make that ordering process, to mobilize that ordering process and make that ordering process simpler, faster, more effective? And actually what we've come up with, there are some features in the app that BlueFletch and Catavolt have built for us that aren't in the web app. There are some ways in which that mobile app is actually simpler, easier, faster. There's some stuff in there I wish was in the base web app that they've been able to build for us.
What's an example of that? Like be able to see previous orders or what's...
Yeah, they can. Agencies can see order history. The order product inventory is trimmed down. So there are some categories of things depending on what kind of an agency you are and what programs you qualify for. There are certain things in our inventory that you're not allowed to order because you haven't qualified for whatever that program is. And that donor says, you know, then we only want certain kinds of people to have access to this food.
Yep.
Our web-based ordering system is a little dumb in that regard, and it shows everybody everything, and they kind of wade through the categories and get down to the bottom and say, oh, wait a minute, I can't order that. It won't let me order it. The mobile app doesn't let them see anything that they're not qualified to order, and it's got some nice kind of search capabilities in it too that are faster and more streamlined. Rather than kind of working your way through product categories, you can zoom in very quickly on the specific things that you want to order. So it's just slick and fast and got a much nicer user interface on it than the web app does.
And it's in your hand, right?
And it's in your hand. So, yeah. You know, you're in your station wagon at your local Publix trying to talk the store manager into giving you his leftover, whatever it might be, you know, and you're placing your order at the same time. You're not having to go home or go to your office or go to the church or whatever and sit down at a computer and do your order.
Yeah. Have you guys seen an uptick in usage or changes in ordering patterns in the last few
weeks?
It's got to roll out?
It's early days. We're at this point, we're piloting and rolling out, you know, doing what we do through 600 agencies sometimes can be a little bit like herding cats.
Yeah.
And so we've got a group of agencies who are our good friends and partners who are kind of in the early stages of testing this out, and we want to make a splash and have some success, have some testimonials to take to the other 600 agencies about what this is an awesome thing. So it's a little early for us to tell how it's going to affect ordering, but we have every belief that, you know, the easier the process is, the more people are going to order from us.
What's the feedback so far from the couple?
Oh, it's awesome. They're very excited about it.
Nice. And then I guess to Jeff's point, if there is a change that it's it's not going to be a 6-month cycle. It's going to be 2 weeks or 1 week to get it pushed out and get those things
updated. The pushing out is not the problem. I mean, that's easy. It's the winning the hearts and minds of 600 agencies who are going to have to change the way they do things. Even if it's a terrific change the way they're going to have to do things, you know, you can't push it down their throats. Obviously.
Yeah, which is George is motioning consistent for all businesses.
Yeah, no, it's right. What I like about the Community Food Bank and what Richard's talking about is they're putting themselves in the shoes or looking through the eyes of their agencies. And, you know, I give you a challenge. Take your favorite app. If you use Google Maps, if you use Facebook, if you use your email app, delete it off your phone and try to go through the web to do that. And what you'll find is it adds an extra 30 seconds, 2 minutes, whatever it may be. In your personal day, that's a lot. What we've seen is the difference in mobility versus a desktop is when you're sitting at a desktop, you kind of have time to go navigate through, do whatever you need to do. On mobile, you need to consume it right away. So looking through the agency's eyes, these folks are usually not paid to be there. They're volunteer staff. They have their own families. They have their own jobs. They're doing this as an extra thing. And to reduce their complexity is big. Even if it just saves them 2 minutes, that adds up quite a bit. And we see that in every business is that giving people the convenience to do something enables them to do it more frequently, to do it at the right time instead of saving it till later, forgetting it to the next day. All of a sudden, it has impact. One thing about the Atlanta Community Food Bank that's neat is they're volunteer program. I just wanted to say we did that in the last few weeks, and it's a tremendous amount of fun. It's almost too much fun because you're like, I'm here to make a difference, not to have fun. So I would encourage anybody to that's looking for a corporate outing to do it. My first time I ever heard about the Atlanta Community Food Bank was my wife used to work at Coca-Cola. They did a volunteer event there, and she came back and said, wow, that was a blast to do. And it kind of left a solid impression in my mind. So when we talked about it this year, I already kind of felt like I knew the place because of my wife's experience there. So if anybody's looking for a good volunteer opportunity, they even let kids 6 and over, is that correct, or 7? Or
I think it's 8.
8, at some age. So you could bring, it's a family kind of environment, and it's actually a lot of fun if you ever want to see how logistics works in a warehouse, how to these things work. So I encourage you to do that.
How many tons of food did your team store, George?
I think we set a world record of
of course you did.
13 and a half tons, right? Or something to that
right.
nature.
You guys were busy.
Jeff, the bar has been raised.
Yeah. Jeff was there. I think it wasn't a record at all, by the way, but they made us feel really good about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And Richard, for folks that are interested in actually helping with that sorting process, or let's say if somebody had a team of 5 to 400 that wanted to help sort food, where do they reach out to you guys on?
You go to ACFB, that's AtlantaCommunityFoodBank.org, and there's a volunteer tab, and it lists all of our volunteer opportunities. Sorting food is one of the big ones, but there are other opportunities as well. It's very easy. We try to make it, as George said, as fun as possible. We pay a lot of attention to making the volunteer experience not only rewarding for what you're doing, but fun, and we want people to come back. We want that to be a return thing. So ACFB.org.
You haven't built a mobile app for the volunteers yet?
We have not.
Okay. It sounds like a gamification of sorting. It sounds like a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, then we know we actually did 17 tons or not, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. See the tallies are going throughout the day. We got to push. We got to get this last ton, guys.
I mean, gamification works. Jeff, I had another question for you. Just thinking about you mentioned the iteration process. So actually going through and having faster cycles and making updates. I know traditionally, when you and I have talked, it's been, you go through, you do wireframes designs, you talk to, like George was saying, you go talk to the end users and build out paper prototypes and that. How is this different than the traditional modeling you've seen?
So that's actually really different. And it was a big challenge for us to wrap our heads around. When we came into this project, one of the things we wanted to do is start building a bunch of wireframes. And while we're not talking about super heavy documentation, general Blue Fletch, do a lot of agile project management on our end. We still went through some of those documentation efforts of let's think this through, let's plan this out before we just start building. We don't want to just end up with a lot of waste. And we kept getting this at the time, it felt like this odd pushback from the Catapult team. They're like, why are you guys, doing all this? Why don't you just build it? And our natural response was, well, we don't want to just build right away. We want to, have a plan of some sort. And they're like, well, why don't you just build it? And after finally listening to them and doing it ourselves, we realized the amount of time we spent designing it and putting together those wireframes, we literally could have built it in Catapult. And so what we found is that process where you get a huge amount of time savings, and that if you have an idea of, hey, what about this feature or this function that we want to build, we'll just go spend an hour or two to actually put it together and then put it in front of a client or put it in front of a customer or an end user to have them test it out. And if they don't like it, if it doesn't work, you can scrap it. And you don't lose any additional time that you would have left or you would have lost doing the designs in the first place. And it's a much more effective approach of going through that iterative process, and that you're not only just showing them a design of what something might look like, but you're actually giving them the end product to let them use and play with so that we can get some real, super tangible feedback about what you're building.
Yep.
I'd like to kind of use an analogy to Field of Dreams. If you build it, they'll want to change everything about it. So what we find is every wireframe and everything, I think they're fantastic. When you get an app in your hand and you start seeing, it takes 7 touches on the screen to do this thing. What if we had this, and I do it all the time. I do it in one touch or whatever. Once you start experiencing it and using it, a lot of the usability ideas start coming out. So to Jeff's point, what we like to do is, it's kind of like, because it's so fast, it's actually kind of like wireframes, but it's a usable app. and you put it in the user's hands, and you have to kind of have a little bit of thick skin and not be worried about getting feedback. Because what they're doing, they're not critiquing your work. They're giving you feedback on how to make it better. And that's what we call social development. Social development is when an IT professional and a business professional sit in a room and they change the flow of the application right then and there. A lot of times, if you have your laptop open, you could actually change it and let them see it. Well, what if I move this up? What if I move this down and do all that? And so, you know, it just ends up with products that are fit into the daily use of what people do. And I think that's the goal for everybody.
It's almost like, to steal a couple of terms from Eric Ries of Lean Startup, is your MVP becomes your end product.
Nice. You know, to shorten those, I know Eric Ries is always the Lean Startup. It's a book about shortening the cycles and focusing on the core, I guess the core pieces first, right?
Yep.
And test it.
It's all about testing and validating your hypothesis, your business hypothesis. And one of the approaches he takes is, you know, really, you know, build an MVP. And an MVP doesn't necessarily need to be a product. It could be a paper prototype. It could be talking to customers. The beauty of a product like Catavolt is that your product is now your MVP. You can build the end product in just as much time as you do those paper prototypes.
Yep.
And users have a hard time reacting in the abstract, right? So the closer what you're showing them is to something that actually works, the easier it is for them to give you good feedback as opposed to some paper sketch or a wireframe or whatever. So there's a lot of value in that.
Absolutely.
From an end user's perspective.
Yeah, and one thing that people worry about is actually success of their project. So that's another thing we should talk about just kind of quickly is, what if all of a sudden all 600 agencies start using it a lot more, right? And so one of the things we build into the system is the ability to scale that and scale it efficiently. And so in working with businesses that can't predict what the new usage patterns are, to have a platform where you could build an MVP really quickly, put it out there, and sometimes it works really well, and a lot of people want to use it. And so Catavolt is a good partner to help scale it out and make sure that you don't become overburdened with an application that caught on maybe quicker or in a bigger scale than what you're used to.
Awesome. One other question, I guess, for Jeff and George. Maybe you guys have found there's certain things that make these projects go faster. What are the things that, you know, if you say, you know, normally it takes 6 weeks or 12 weeks to get this going, that a company could do if they try to get going to that helps them shorten that cycle? Are there certain like things that took the longest, even with like ACFB or some other companies you guys worked with?
Let's see. From things that took the longest perspective, it'd probably be the early stage stuff, defining the business problem that you want to attack, and you know. Understandably, there's, you know, you need to get buy-in from the team. You need to get everybody on the same page and, you know, kind of commit to, this is the problem we're going to solve. Now let's go do it. And you know, that's, if you think about it, that's all the non-solution part of it, the non-technical piece. Those are the business meetings and the requirements gathering sessions. And so that, it didn't, when I say it took the longest, it took as much time as it would with any project.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's two things. It's focus and time. A lot of times, when I say focus, it's let's solve this one problem. And if we could solve 50 others, let's do those later. And then the time is, like in the Atlanta Community Food Bank, people have a full day's worth of work. And so revamping this process almost becomes an after hours or a side project type of experience. So that happens in all the clients where if a process is working, whether it's working well, not well, efficient, not efficient, you spend a lot of time running it. So doing the business process change becomes kind of a side thing. Now, in places where you need that business process change to stay competitive, it tends to start bubbling up to the top. And so if you have focus, you try to solve a concrete problem, and you put the time into it to say, you know what, I want to get this out soon because it's going to make an impact to my business. That's what really speeds up that early cycle, to Jeff's
point. Well, I just want to, from the food bank's perspective, give a shout out to the Blue Fletch team and to Catavolt on this one, because, you know, I have four people in our IT department at the food bank, and they're fairly busy folks. And there's no way we could have done this project without the volunteer help from the folks at Blue Fletch. And there's no way they could have done this in a viable way, I'm quite certain, if it wasn't for the Catavolt technology. So we're really very grateful that they agreed to come help us do this. It's been a tremendous project for us.
Awesome. It's a cool win. And then the, I guess, Richard, for you guys, the holiday seasons, you guys are probably swamped right now, right?
This is our busiest time of year between, you know, food donations and need over the holidays and financial donations as well, because it's end of year tax season, of course.
Can you talk about financial donations? So I know that that was probably with all the logistics and pieces you have. So running trucks all around the 49 metro counties, whatever it is around here, it's got to be expensive. Is that really the biggest area for you guys, or do you have, what's the typical donations you guys look for? So it's food or money, or
it's food and or money. We love both, and anybody wants to give us anything, we're delighted to have it. But we have a major fundraising, opportunity. We run it, our cash costs just to run the food bank are about $25 million a year. And that all is funded very largely by private donations. We're very fortunate to have large donors and foundations and others, but we have a very large number of individual donations. And, you know, we don't care if it's $5 or $25 or whatever it is you can send our way. We're delighted to have it. You know, we pride ourselves on being very careful stewards of that money. And the 95% of every dollar that goes to the food bank goes directly into food programs for agencies. And we figure that for every dollar that people donate to us, we're able to put about 4 meals back out into the community.
That's fantastic. And that's all in the Atlanta and North Georgia area?
All in 29 counties, including Metro Atlanta. And, you know, all the suburbs and up to the Tennessee border and over to the Alabama border. So it's a big territory.
Fantastic. And then the URL again for folks to find out more about you?
ACFB.org.
Awesome. So check it out and definitely give food and or money. Or if you have team time, you want to volunteer. It's like I think George and Jeff and I said, it's definitely a great event to help out. And really, it's an awesome, awesome service you guys have for Georgia and Atlanta area. So thank you very much for all of your efforts and everything the ACFB mm-hmm. has done for our city and our counties.
Thank you all.
And then George and Jeff, thank you guys very much. And George, one more time, the Catavolt website was?
It's CATAVOLT.com.
Awesome. Check it out. Catavolt, and your kids can pronounce it. So
your kids can say it. Trust
that'll
me.
Be it. And then Jeff Bluefletch, what's the?
www.bluefletch, BLUEFLETCH.com.
Fantastic.
Sounds like a spelling bee in here.
It does. I'm not good at spelling. Everybody knows this. All right. Thank you guys very much, and everybody have a great holidays. Thank you.
Thanks, Brett.
Thanks.
Thank you.